on the road or off-road, Chevy Silverado is built for tough performance in any condition. Hit the road in a new Silverado pickup. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for a dealer near you. Chevy Silverado, official truck partner of the Chicago Bears.
There's a story about me and a porn nickname. Yeah. I remember Kristen McQueary was editing a column I wrote about it years ago at the paper. And she was concerned, and other editors were concerned, because the name is Johnny Two Rods. How did I get that name? Well, I guess you're going to have to listen to this podcast with Jack Ford, legendary fishing guide, legendary tire of flies, and his book, The View from the Middle Seat, Lessons Learned from a Lifetime of Guiding. Chef Carlin is here, executive producer at WGN Radio, Mr. Science, and I'm here, John Cass, husband, father, columnist at johncassnews.com. And where are you? When you should be fishing, when you should be out there learning about fly fishing, because it's not that complicated, and it's so much fun. You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
The man who knows how I got the nickname, and it's not a porn nickname, the nickname Johnny Two Rods is with us. Usually and always, we don't pay guests to be on the Chicago Way. But this time, having him on here when steelhead are in the river is costing him some money, and I appreciate him coming on. So does Jeff. It's Jack Ford, legendary fly fisherman and fly fishing guide, who's got a new book out, The View from the Middle Seat, Lessons Learned from a Lifetime of Guiding. And if you're thinking about a Father's Day gift, a birthday gift, or just a gift for yourself, I can't think of a better one. Welcome to the Chicago Way, Jack Ford.
My honor and pleasure to be there.
That's so good, Jack. I mean, I love what you do. It's such a fun and noble enterprise. I mean, what's the old saying? Give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. Teach a man a fish, you feed him for a lifetime. What's it like? I mean, you gotta do it for a reason. Are you just a lifelong fisherman, or is it something that runs in your family?
I have been fishing since 7 or 8 years old. And even when I was working my real job, I was very involved in TU and teaching people how to cast and fish and tie flies. I did that for TU for 40 years before I started my guiding career, which is now 30 years old. So pretty much 70 years of teaching.
Jack was at a group talking with us at Erie Cafe. We meet once a month. And he was saying that when he went to the doctor, did a physical, and his heart's doing really well, which I guess you can't, you can understand that since he's on the river. I think you're 80 years old.
81 to be exact.
And you're rowing upstream?
Well, I row a lot, treading the water. Sometimes I row for 10 hours a day.
How's that for exercise?
Holding the boat back against the current so people can streamer fish, actually. So,
yes, Jack taught me how to do that. And that's when the famous incident took place.
The incident, Jack.
Yeah, that's when I should have thrown you out of the boat.
We have evidence. Anyway, why fly fishing?
It's like any other sport, but it's more integral. And even at 81 years old, I feel every year that I'm learning something new, either how to teach or different technique of fishing or casting or something. But one of my clients was in a boat with me last week, and he's been a client with me for 30 years professionally, but he's been fishing with me since his 70s. And again, he said, you know what? I just learned something new. He was having trouble doing a back cast, they call it, and I gave him a tip, and he's telling me every time he comes, he learns something new. So that's what it's all about.
A day on the river, how does it begin? It begins with guys, some of them, you know, are masters. I am not a master. I'm just a beginner, a learner. But you get out on that river, and you talk about finding peace. To me, it's kind of like being in a church. You know, you forget everything when you say your prayers, and you forget everything when you're focusing. If you're drifting with a nymph, which means under the water, not casting, or you're focusing on the line and the tension on your finger, and the entire universe goes to that one point. And it's so relaxing to me. And I wonder, do you see this sport as becoming more popular?
Absolutely. I believe, especially among women, it's the fastest growing sport in America right now.
And you spoke to it earlier, but it's a complex sport. I mean, you could get as advanced as people doing their own lures and flies and making their own equipment.
Right.
Their own boat. I mean, I think about it as this massive lifestyle. And how do you feel about it when you see other people talking about it? I mean, Hemingway always gets all the hat tip for his stories about fishing, but how do you see it perceived by other people?
It's almost like a religion. It's a passion within that continues to grow and grow and grow. And the more you learn, the more you want to learn. And It's not all about just catching fish. It's all about being outdoors and being with friends and learning about the experience of being outdoors and learn about the experience of fly fishing. And there's a lot of different ways and methods and techniques to fly fish. And a lot of people get involved in, like you said, the tying the flies. And I've been doing that since I was in grade school, too. And when I'm not on the river, I'm usually relaxing in front of my fly tying device. I don't think I've turned my TV on once this year. Once in a while, I watch a college football game with my wife or a basketball game. But other than that, I enjoy tying. And I wrote that book, and that took a long time. It took me like 3 years of my time because I'm not a writer, so I couldn't just sit down and work on it continuously. So that brought out some passion in me and some thoughts and made me think more about what I was doing and how I was teaching and everything. And I've got so many good reviews and comments back from people. I'm really pleased. So.
Well, it's like a summation of a lifetime of work. And if I were your editor, I'd say, good job. I bought the book and I recommend it to everyone. I'll write a column on it. You're on the podcast. How could people find this book, and how can they buy it? Let's get to the first
one. Well, it's in like 23 or 24 fly shops right now. But also, they can just go to my website, which is Country Anglers. Just the way it sounds, countryanglers.com. There's a link on there. They can go right on there and order it, and it'll be mailed to them.
You've fished all over the world.
Well, not all of it, but I have fished my share of it. Well, yeah, I've been to New Zealand, you know, in Canada and Philly and wherever. But I'll tell you, Michigan in the Midwest and Montana, which I've guided for 30 years, 25 in Montana and 30 in Michigan. But we have some really good fishing right here.
Yeah, we do. One of the things I had to promise when my friend Jack Fuller took me up to a certain river up north was to never mention the river. He never wanted me to write about the river, and or he wanted me to write about it, but never to say the name. Is that crazy?
You not only don't write about it, but I don't even tell my best friend where I fish. It's a good way to lose a friend, because and that happened to me once. But
what happened? You brought a friend to your favorite spot? What happened?
I had a spot where I fished when I was a kid a lot. And pretty much nobody ever got back in there. And one day I took this guy there and fished with him. And I went back up there a couple weeks later to fish. And there was a car there that I've never seen before. Matter of fact, in my whole lifetime, I had never seen a car there before. And I got on the water and walked down the river, and I ran into this guy. And he told me that the guy not only told everybody at lunch where I was fishing, but drew him a map on how to get there.
Oh, jeez.
That was the last day that guy was ever in my vehicle or boat. Ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. But the story I want to hear is John and his two rods.
Wait, first I have to make a preface. Jack told this story in front of some of the most important legal minds in the country at lunch. And I almost wanted to cross-examine him, but I wouldn't, because this is Jack Ford. I'm not going to put him on the spot, but you go ahead, Jack, and tell the story.
Well, we were fishing for steelhead. John hooked a steelhead. It was just below the Rod and Gun Club pond where it comes in at Dinner Creek. And it was a beautiful fish, and he hooked it, and we were fighting it, and everything was going well. And when it got close enough to the boat, unfortunately, John did exactly what I told him. But I thought we had enough line in that we could just kind of pull it up to the net. So I stood up in the middle of the boat where I'm always at, and instructed John to pull back harder, whatever. And we didn't have enough line, so he pulled back way back, which put way too much pressure on the rod and broke the rod.
He thought, Jack Ford thought I knew what I was doing, okay?
Just reel it when you can. Keep it low right. This just goes to show you how much luck fish is.
It's unbelievable.
Just keep it low right.
What do we got on there?
It's either a brown or a small steelhead, one or the other. But probably a brown behind that red. Don't reel in too much. Low right, low right. Keep it low.
Low tip?
Yeah, your tip low. Now bring that tip right over my head. But reel more line in. Reel more line in. Keep it low. Keep it low. Okay, now slowly bring your rod tip right over my head. Just hang on, that fish ain't ready yet. That's a pretty darn nice fish.
It's a nice fish.
Keep it low. Reel. Keep it low.
What do you think?
It's coming off my board.
You pay attention to the fish.
I have some words to
keep
say.
Keep it low.
All right, now bring it up high and pull that fish right towards me. High. Pull it towards me.
Go, no, go. Get the rod. Get the rod. Get the rod.
No, it's me. What did you do? Grab the rod?
No. It just broke.
And that just broke?
It just broke.
I did not grab the rod.
You overbent it.
Sorry.
It just broke. That was
it's from overbending. Pulled the rod way behind.
Sick.
I told you to do. But you should have put more missed. Line. I would have brought the fish in. That's a small steelhead.
was a beautiful rod, and I don't know what to say.
Well, that's why you buy guaranteed rods.
Right. That's why you need.
It's still upsetting.
It's fishing insurance for the uninitiated and the clumsy like me.
Right, Jack, exactly.
Is it a frequent occurrence if someone breaks a rod or a lifetime?
No, it's not, but I'll tell you the truth. I had a day, it was either last fall or fall before last, I had clients that had been coming for quite a while, and they set a record. They broke three of my rods in one day.
Oh no.
Yeah.
And Jack's rods are not like the cheap, thick plastic rods that you could get for, you know, a few bucks. I mean, he's a legendary guy in the river, and his fishing gear is superb.
Yeah, unfortunately, the real expensive, good rods are made to be real light, and they will break easier if you abuse them than like an old fiberglass rod. You just couldn't break one of them if you wanted to, really. But the companies do stand behind a rod, so that's good. So all you got to do is pay for the postage, and you get another rod back. But it's just the inconvenience. Like if I have people break one or two or three rods,
you throw them out of the boat.
I have to have other rods to use for them. Right. So you end up, you have to have like eight rods all the time just in case something gets broken, you know. So it's just, it happens, and nobody ever feels good about it, but it's one of those things.
Yeah, and sometimes you get a nickname that sounds like a porn star, and you can't live it down. Because those guys,
that name does fit pretty well. I didn't know about the first rod, but I do know about the second one.
Yeah, those guys are merciless. Anyway, we're talking to Jack Ford about his book, The View from the Middle Seat, Lessons Learned from a Lifetime of Guiding. I can't tell you enough. If you like fishing, get this book. If you love fishing, you'll already have it. And you can find Jack, where again? On the web, on the interweb?
Country Anglers.
CountryAnglers.com. I'm just going to check it while we're talking.
And Jack, I mean, as a guy who lives a lot of his life catching fish, what's your favorite
fish? You know, I do it all, but my favorite type of fishing is fishing with a streamer for predator fish, big fish. Mostly brown trout, but I also will fish for smallmouth bass and pike or muskie, something like that. But that's my favorite go-to fishing myself. But I've dry fly fished all my life, and I've fished spring creeks for 40, 50 years. And I'm diverse, but if I have a preference, I like to see the big fish come and eat the fly. So I think the best way to do that is to streamer fish, and I do a lot of that.
Streamer fishing is when you throw a streamer on top of the water and then you strip the line back towards you and bring it towards you and twitches, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of retrieving techniques that's in my book, actually, that I think makes a difference in who catches the fish and who doesn't. So
Jack Ford,
my book is six chapters of streamer fishing, one a mouse and one a pike and bass, and then there's a half dozen chapters about dry fly fishing too.
Jack Ford is an Orvis endorsed professional guide. He's a Trout Unlimited endorsed outfitter and guide, and the 2013 recipient of Trout Unlimited's Distinguished Service Award. Because part of loving fly fishing is to love the natural world and to want to preserve it. And there's Trout Unlimited is doing a lot of great work in reclaiming streams and reef configuring or taking down the barriers to flowing water and helping the streams and rivers return to their natural state so that trout come up. What's the future of fly fishing in this country now, Jack? What do you see happening?
I think the future is very well, and I think the people are getting more educated all the time about protecting the rivers. Even though there's a lot more people doing it, in a sense that may be good, because sometimes to get people in legislation or the DNR or any place to listen, the more numbers you have, the more voice you have. So I think fishing is good, and I think it's going to always be here.
We're in the middle of, or the beginning of, or let's see, towards the end of steelheading. Tell us about steelheading in the waters around the Midwest, the Midwestern steelhead fishing.
Well, there's some great fishing, not just in Michigan, but on the western, northern, and eastern shores of Michigan is very, very good steelhead fishing. But Pennsylvania, New York, and all those states that are linked to the Great Lakes, if you will, even Ohio has great steelhead fishing. They're saying the steelhead is declining, and that can be true. And there's some issues relative to that. People walking in the river and walking on the gravel after the fish lay the eggs can be a problem. Fishing to the fish on the gravel can be the problem. There's a lot of invasive species now in America, which is going to cause problems. So all these issues have to be addressed. I don't think the voices are loud enough right now, especially about the invasive species.
Well, what could be done?
The real problem is spreading. So people's got to wash their boots, treat their boots. I use 409, which is a spray, and make sure you wash your boat if you go from one river to another river. But anybody that's listening to this podcast or read my book should make sure that they know what they should be doing, and they should look at the information on the DNR. Department of Natural Resource websites, and most fly shops have something stuck in their window about invasive species, and a lot of the excesses on the river have information about them. But being educated and doing the right thing is the key.
When you started fishing long time ago in, I would think, Michigan, right? How did you start? And what did you pay for your first fly rod? I heard that story.
So, kind of interesting. I started when I was like, I was casting a fly rod by the time I was in the third grade, which is really young, but we had a place on a lake up north. And there was a kid down three cottage from me named Glenn Sandvik, and his father was a good fly fisherman. Norwegian guy, and they tied their flies and everything. And I was watching Glenn go. I would be out on the dock fishing with a bobber, and I'd watch Glenn go out and row his boat. And he was about 5 years older than I was, or so. And come back, and then I'd go run down and see he'd always have a bucket full of fish. And one day, a year or two later, he yelled at me and said, "Hey, kid, you want to go fishing?" And what I didn't know is he really wanted me to go roam around the lake so he could fish. That worked out good, because that's when I started saving for my first fly rod, and it cost me $4.45. And it was a 9-foot bamboo, cheap made Japanese fly rod, probably. And I used that for a few years, and then I saved enough money to buy my second fly rod. And back then, if you were a kid and you wanted something, you basically went out and shoveled sidewalks, mowed lawns, and did whatever you did, get the money because your parents didn't buy everything for you. And the next fly rod I bought was a Head and Bell fiberglass fly rod when I was about 14, probably. And it cost me $11.97. And the reason I remember how much the rods cost is that it took a lot of shoveling sidewalks and mowing lawns before I saved the money.
And then here comes this columnist from Chicago breaking a $1,000 rod, lifting it up over your head. And I'll never forget it. But you know what? I do cherish the time, and I want to be in the boat with you again. Jack Ford.
Likewise. I think we had a great time.
We had a great time. You gave me the foundation about streaming, so I'm in debt. Jack Ford, The View from the Middle Seat, Lessons Learned from a Lifetime of Guiding. You can find it at trout shops everywhere, or just go to countryanglers.com and maybe even book Jack as a guide for some steelhead or salmon in the fall. Just don't break his rods, okay? Just don't break the rod. Jack, thanks for being here on the Chicago Way.
Nice talking to you guys. Take care.
Nice talking to you too, sir.
You too.
Here's a low.
Jack, I see the beads of sweat coming off his forehead.
Yeah, I know.
What do you think?
It's coming off my forehead.
You pay attention to the fish.
I have some words to
keep
say.
Keep it low.
All right, now bring it up high and pull that fish right toward me. High.
Get the rod. Jack Ford, legendary fly fishing guide in the Midwest and throughout the West and the East and the North, and for his book, The View from the Middle Seat, Lessons Learned from a Lifetime of Guiding. And for Jeff Carlin, co-host here, executive producer at WGN Radio, lover of pies, baker of cats. Sorry, Jeff, it's the other way. Lover of cats, baker of pies. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, mild-mannered columnist at johncassnews.com. Tight lines. And go fishing. Be outside. Stand next to the water where the universe just becomes reduced to the tension of light line on your finger. It's like church. It's not church, but it's kind of like church. And join us for another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.